which meant that she needed to know more than his folder contained. She wasn't sure how to get the things she needed, how to even access them, but she knew people who might. This was what she missed most about the Down Deep. They were family there, all with useful skills that overlapped and covered one another. Anything she could do for any of them, she would, and she knew they would do the same, even be an army for her. This was a comfort she sorely missed, a safety net that felt all too far away. After sending the request, she sat back with Holston's folder. Here was a man, a good man, who had known her deepest secrets. He was the only one who ever had. And soon, God willing, Juliet would uncover his. 3. It was well after 10 by the time Juliet pushed away from her desk. Her eyes had become too sore to stare at her monitor any longer, too tired to read one more case note. She powered down her computer, filed the folders away, killed the overhead lights, and locked the office door from the outside. As she pocketed her keys, her stomach grumbled, and the fading odor of a rabbit stew reminded her that she'd missed yet another dinner. That made it 3 nights in a row. 3 nights of focusing so hard on a job she barely knew how to perform, a job she had no one to guide her through, that she'd neglected to eat. If her office didn't abut a noisy, aroma-filled cafeteria, she might be able to forgive herself. She pulled her keys back out and crossed the dimly lit room, weaving around nearly invisible chairs left scattered between the tables. A teenage couple was just leaving, having stolen a few dark moments in the wall screen's twilight before curfew. Juliet called out for them to descend safely, mostly because it felt like the sheriff thing to do, and they giggled at her as they disappeared into the stairwell. She imagined they were already holding hands and would steal a few kisses before they got to their apartments. Adults knew of these illicit things, but let them slide, a gift each generation bestowed on the next. For Juliet, however, it was different. She had made the same choices as an adult, to love without sanction, and so her hypocrisy was more keenly felt. As she approached the kitchen, she noticed the cafeteria wasn't quite empty. A lone figure sat in the deep shadows by the wall screen, staring at the inky blackness of nighttime clouds hanging over darkened hills. It appeared to be the same figure as the night before, the one who had watched the sunlight gradually fade while Juliet worked alone in her office. She adjusted her route to the kitchen in order to pass behind the man. Staring all day at folders full of bad intentions had made her a budding paranoid. She used to admire people who stood out, but now she could feel herself wary of them. She moved between the wall screen and the nearest table, pausing to push chairs back into place, their metal feet scraping on the tile. She kept an eye on the seated man, but he never once turned toward the noise. He just stared up at the clouds, something in his lap, a hand held up by his chin. Juliet walked right behind him, passing between the table and his chair, which had been moved strangely close to the wall screen. She fought the urge to clear her throat or ask him a question. Instead, she passed on by, jangling her master key from the crowded ring that had come with her new job. Twice, she glanced back over her shoulder before she reached the kitchen door. The man did not move. She let herself inside the kitchen and hit one of the light switches. After a genial flicker, the overhead bulbs popped on and shattered her night vision. She pulled a gallon of juice from one of the walk-in refrigerators and grabbed a clean glass from the drying rack. Back in the walk-in, she found the stew, covered and already cold, and brought it out as well. She ladled 2 scoops into a bowl and rattled around in a drawer for a spoon. She only briefly considered heating up the stew as she returned the large pot to its frosted shelf. With her juice and bowl in hand, she returned to the cafeteria, knocking the lights off with her elbow and pushing the door shut with her foot. She sat down in the darkness at the end of one of the long tables and slurped on her late meal, keeping an eye on this strange man who seemed to peer into the darkness as if something could be seen out there. Her spoon eventually scraped the bottom of her empty bowl. She finished the last of her juice, and not once had the man turned away from the wall screen. She pushed the dishes away from herself, insanely curious. The figure reacted to this, unless it was mere coincidence. He leaned forward and held his outstretched hand out at the screen. Juliet thought she could make out a rod or a stick in his grasp, but it was too dark to tell. After a moment, he leaned over his lap, and Juliet heard the squeak of charcoal on expensive-sounding paper. She got up, taking this movement as an opening, and strolled closer to where he was sitting.
"Raiding the larder, are we?"
he asked.
His voice startled her.
"Worked through dinner," she stammered, as if she needed to explain herself.
"Must be nice to have the keys."
He still didn't turn away from the screen, and Juliet reminded herself to lock the kitchen door before she left. "What are you doing?" she asked. The man reached behind himself and grabbed a nearby chair, slid it around to face the screen.
"You want to see?"
Juliet approached warily, grabbed the backrest, and deliberately slid the chair a few inches further from the man. It was too dark in the room to make out his features, but his voice sounded young. She chastised herself for not committing him to memory the night before when there'd been more light. She would need to become more observant if she was going to be any good at her job.
"What are we looking at, exactly?" she asked.
She stole a glance at his lap, where a large piece of white paper faintly glowed in the wan light leaking from the stairwell. It was spread flat across his thighs, as if a board or something hard rested beneath it.
"I think those two are going to part. Look, there."
The man pointed at the wall screen and into a mix of blacks so rich and so deep as to appear as one. The contours and shadowy hues Juliet could make out almost seemed to be a trick played by her eyes, as real as ghosts. But she followed his finger, wondering if he were mad or drunk, and tolerated the exhausting silence that followed.
"There," he whispered, excitement on his breath. Juliet saw a flash, a spot of light, like someone flicking on a torch far across a dark generator room. And then it was gone. She bolted out of her chair and stood near to the wall screen, wondering what was out there. The man's charcoal squeaked on his paper.
"What the hell was that?" Juliet asked. The man laughed.
"A star," he said. "If you wait, you might see it again. We've got thin clouds tonight and high winds. The one there is getting ready to pass."
Juliet turned to find her chair and saw that he was holding his charcoal at arm's length, staring up at the spot where the light had flashed, one eye winked shut.
"How can you see anything out there?" she asked, settling back into her plastic chair.
"Oh, the longer you do this, the better you see at night."
He leaned over his paper and scribbled some more.
"And I've been doing this a long time."
"Doing what, exactly? Just staring at the clouds?"
He laughed. "Mostly, yeah, unfortunately. But what I'm trying to do is see past them. Watch, we might get another glance."
She peered up in the general direction of the last flash. Suddenly, it popped back into view, a pinprick of light like a signal from high over the hill.
"How many do you see?" he asked.
"One," she told him. She was almost breathless from the newness of the sight.
She knew what stars were. They were part of her vocabulary, but she'd never seen one before.
"There was a faint one just to the side of it as well. Let me show you."
There was a soft click, and a red glow spilled over the man's lap. Juliet saw that he had a flashlight hanging around his neck, a film of red plastic wrapped around the end. It made the lens look like it was on fire, but it emanated a gentle glow that didn't barrage her eyes the way the kitchen lights had. Spread across his lap, she saw a large piece of paper covered with dots. They were arranged haphazardly, a few perfectly straight lines running in a grid around them. Tiny notes were scattered everywhere.
"The problem is that they move," he told her. "If I see that one here tonight..."
He tapped one of the dots with his finger. There was a smaller dot beside it.
At the exact same time tomorrow, it'll be a little over here.
Turning to Juliet, she saw that the man was young, probably in his late 20s. He smiled, was quite handsome, and added,
"It took me a long time to figure that out."
Juliet wanted to tell him that he hadn't been alive a long time, but remembered what it felt like as a shadow when people dismissed her the same way. "What's the point?" she asked, and saw his smile fade.
"What's the point of anything?"
He returned his gaze to the wall and doused the flashlight. Juliet realized she'd asked the wrong question, had upset him, and then she wondered if there was anything illicit in this activity of his, anything that defied the taboos. Was collecting data on the outside any different than the people who sat and stared at the hills? She made a mental note to ask Marnes about this when the man turned to her again in the darkness.
"My name's Lucas," he said.
Her eyes had adjusted well enough to see his hand stretched out toward her. "Juliet," she replied, grabbing and squeezing his palm.
"The new sheriff."
It wasn't a question, and of course he knew who she was. Everyone up top seemed to. "What do you do when you're not up here?" she asked. She was pretty sure this wasn't his job. Nobody should get chits for staring up at the clouds.
"I live in the upper mids," Lucas said. "I work on computers during the day. I only come up when the viewing's good."
He switched the light back on and turned toward her in a way that suggested the stars weren't the most important thing on his mind anymore.
"There's a guy on my hall who works up here on dinner shift. When he gets home, he lets me know what the clouds were like during the day. If he gives me the thumbs up, I come take my chances."
"And so you're making a schematic of them?" Juliet gestured toward the large sheet of paper.
"Trying to. It'll probably take a few lifetimes."
He tucked his charcoal behind his ear, pulled a rag from his coveralls, and wiped his fingers clean of black residue. "And then what?" Juliet asked.
"Well, hopefully I'll infect some shadow with my sickness and they'll pick up wherever I leave off."
"So literally, like, several lifetimes?"
He laughed, and Juliet realized it was a pleasant one. "At least," he said.
"Well, I'll leave you to it," she said, suddenly feeling guilty for talking to him. She stood and reached out her hand, and he took it warmly. He pressed his other palm to the back of her hand and held it a moment longer than she would have expected.
"Pleasure to meet you, Sheriff."
He smiled up at her, and Juliet didn't understand a word of what she muttered in return. 4. The next morning, Juliet arrived early at her desk, having stolen little more than 4 hours of sleep. Beside her computer, she saw a package waiting on her. A small bundle wrapped in recycled pulp paper and encircled with white electrical ties. She smiled at this last touch and reached into her coveralls for her multi-tool. Pulling out the smallest pick from the tool, she stuck it into the clasp of one of the electrical ties and slowly pulled the ratcheting device apart, keeping it intact for future use. She remembered the trouble she'd gotten into as a mechanic shadow the day she'd been caught cutting a plastic tie from an electrical board. Walker, already an old crank those decades ago, had yelled at her for the waste and then had shown her how to tease the little clasp loose to preserve the tie for later use. Years had passed, and when she was much older, she had found herself passing this lesson on to another shadow named Scotty. He had been a young lad at the time, but she had lit into him when he had made the same careless mistake she once had. She remembered frightening the poor boy white as a cinder block, and he had remained nervous around her for months after. Maybe because of that outburst, she had paid him more attention as he continued his training, and eventually, the two had grown close. He quickly grew up to become a capable young man, a whiz with electronics, able to program a pump's timing chip in less time than it took her to break one down and put it back together. She loosened the other tie, crossing the package, and knew the bundle was from him. Several years ago, Scotty had been recruited by IT and had moved up to the 30s. He had become too smart for mechanical, as Knox had put it.
Juliet set the two electrical straps aside and pictured the young man preparing this package for her. The request she'd wired down to mechanical the night before must have bounced back up to him, and he had spent the night dutifully doing this favor for her. She pried the paper apart carefully. Both it and the plastic ties would need to be returned. They were both too dear for her to keep and light enough to porter on the cheap. As the package came apart, she noticed that Scotty had crimped the edges and had folded these tabs under each other, a trick children learned so they could wrap notes without the expense of glue or tape. She disassembled his meticulous work with care, and the paper finally came loose. Inside, she found a plastic box, like the kind used to sort nuts and bolts for small projects down in mechanical. She opened the lid and saw that the package wasn't just from Scotty. It must have been hurried up to him along with a copy of her request. Tears came to her eyes as the smell of Mama Jean's oatmeal and cornflour cookies drifted out. She plucked one, held it to her nose, and breathed deeply. Maybe she imagined it, but she swore she noted a hint of oil or grease emanating from the old box, the smells of home. Juliet folded the wrapping paper carefully and placed the cookies on top. She thought of the people she would have to share them with. Marnes, of course, but also Pam in the cafeteria, who had been so nice in helping her settle into her new apartment. And Alice, Jean's young secretary, whose eyes had been red with grief for over a week. She pulled the last cookie out and finally spotted the small data drive rattling around in the bottom of the container, a little morsel baked special by Scotty and hidden among the crumbs. Juliet grabbed it and set the plastic case aside. She blew into the little metal end of the drive, getting any debris out, before slotting it into the front of her computer. She wasn't great with computers, but she could get around them. You couldn't do anything in mechanical without submitting a claim, a report, a request, or some other piece of nonsense. And they were handy for logging into pumps and relays remotely to shut them on or off, see their diagnostics, all of that. Once the light on the drive winked on, she navigated it to her screen. Inside, she found a host of folders and files. The little drive must have been stuffed to the brim with them. She wondered if Scotty had gotten any sleep at all the night before. At the top of the list of primary folders was a file named Jules. She clicked this one, and up popped a short text file, obviously from Scotty, but noticeably unsigned.
Jay, don't get caught with this, okay? This is everything from Mr. Lawman's computers, work and home, the last 5 years. A ton of stuff, but wasn't sure what you needed, and this was easier to automate. Keep the ties. I got plenty. And I took a cookie. Hope you don't mind.
Juliet smiled. She felt like reaching out and brushing her fingers across the words, but it wasn't paper and wouldn't be the same. She closed the note and deleted it, then cleared out her trash. Even the first letter of her name up there felt like too much information. She leaned away from her desk and peered into the cafeteria, which appeared dark and empty. It was not yet 5 in the morning, and she would have the upper floor to herself for a while. She first took a moment to browse through the directory structure to see what kind of data she was dealing with. Each folder was neatly labeled. It appeared she had an operating history of Holston's 2 computers. Every keystroke, every day, going back a little more than 5 years, all organized by date and time. Juliet felt overwhelmed by the sheer amount of information. It was far more than she could hope to weed through in a lifetime. But at least she had it. The answers she needed were in there, somewhere among all those files. And somehow, it felt better. She felt better. Just knowing that the solution to this riddle, to Holston's decision to go to cleaning, could now fit in the palm of her hand. She was several hours into sifting through the data when the cafeteria crew staggered in to clean up last night's mess and prepare for breakfast. One of the most difficult things to get used to about the up top was the exacting schedule everyone kept. There was no third shift. There was barely a second shift, except for the dinner staff. In the down deep, the machines didn't sleep, and so the workers barely did either. Work crews often stayed on into extra shifts, and so Juliet had gotten used to surviving on a handful of hours of rest a night. The trick was to pass out now and then from sheer exhaustion, to just rest against a wall with one's eyes closed for 15 minutes, long enough to hold the tiredness at bay. But what had once been survival was now luxury. The ability to forego sleep gave her time in the morning and at night to herself, time to invest in frivolous pursuits on top of the cases she was supposed to be working. It also gave her the opportunity to teach herself how to do the blasted job, since Marnes had become too depressed to help her get up to speed.
Marnes. She looked at the clock over his desk. It was 8:10, and the vats of warm oatmeal and corn grits were already filling the cafeteria with the smells of breakfast.
Marnes was late. She'd been around him less than a week, but she had yet to see him late to anything, ever. This break in the routine was like a timing belt stretching out of shape, a piston developing a knock. Juliet turned her monitor off and pushed away from her desk. Outside, first shift breakfast was beginning to file in, food tokens clinking in the large bucket by the old turnstiles. She left her office and passed through the traffic, spilling from the stairwell. In the line, a young girl tugged on her mother's coveralls and pointed to Juliet as she passed. Juliet heard the mother scolding her child for being rude. There had been quite a bit of chatter the past few days over her appointment. This woman, who had disappeared into mechanical as a child and who had suddenly re-emerged to take over for one of the more popular sheriffs in memory. Juliet cringed from the attention and hurried into the stairwell. She wound her way down the steps as fast as a lightly loaded porter, her feet bouncing off each tread, faster and faster in what felt like an unsafe pace. 4 flights down, after squeezing around a slow couple in between a family heading upstairs for breakfast, she hit the apartment landing, just below her own, and passed through the double doors. The hallway beyond was busy with morning sights and sounds. A squealing teapot, the shrill voices of children, the thunder of feet overhead, shadows hurrying to meet their casters before trailing them off to work. Younger children were lumbering reluctantly off to school. Husbands and wives kissed in doorways while toddlers tugged at their coveralls and dropped toys in plastic cups. Juliet took several turns, winding through the hallways and around the central staircase to the other side of the level. The deputy's apartment was on the far side, way in the back. She surmised that Marnes had qualified for several upgrades over the years, but had passed on them. The one time she had asked Alice, Mayor Jean's old secretary, about Marnes, she had shrugged and told Juliet that he had never wanted or expected anything more than second fiddle. Juliet assumed she meant that he never wanted to be sheriff, but she had begun to wonder in how many other areas of his life that philosophy applied. As she reached his hall, 2 kids ran by holding hands, late for school. They giggled and squealed around the corner, leaving Juliet alone in the hallway. She wondered what she would say to Marnes to justify coming down, to explain her worry. Maybe now was a good time to ask for the folder that he couldn't seem to be without. She could tell him to take the day off, let her handle the office while he got some rest, or maybe fib a little and say she was already in the area for a case. She stopped outside his door and lifted her hand to knock. Hopefully he wouldn't see this as her projecting authority, right? She was just concerned for him, that was all. She rapped on the steel door and waited for him to call her inside. And maybe he did. His voice over the last few days had eroded into a dull and thin rasp. She knocked again, louder this time. "Deputy?" she called. "Everything okay in there?" A woman popped her head out of a door down the hallway. Juliet recognized her from the school recess time in the cafeteria. Was pretty sure her name was Gloria.
"Hey, Sheriff."
"Hey, Gloria, you haven't seen Deputy Marnes this morning, have you?" She shook her head, placed a metal rod in her mouth, and started wrapping her long locks into a bun.
"I haven't," she mumbled.
She shrugged her shoulders and jabbed the rod through her bun, locking her hair into place. "He was on the landing last night, looking ass-whipped as ever." She frowned. "He not show up for work?"
Juliet turned back to the door and tried the handle. It clicked open with the feel of a well-maintained lock. She pushed the door in.
"Deputy, it's Jules. Just checking in on ya."
The door swung open into darkness. The only light spilling in was from the hallway, but it was enough. Juliet turned to Gloria.
"Call Doc Hicks. No, shit." She was still thinking down deep. "Who's the closest doctor up here? Call him."
She ran into the room, not waiting for a reply. There wasn't much space to hang oneself in the small apartment, but Marnes had figured out how. His belt was cinched around his neck, the buckle lodged into the top of the bathroom door. His feet were on the bed, but at a right angle, not enough to support his weight. His butt drooped below his feet, his face no longer red, the belt biting deep into his neck. Juliet hugged Marnes's waist and lifted him up. He was heavier than he looked. She kicked his feet off the bed and they flopped to the floor, making it easier to hold him. There was a curse at the door. Gloria's husband ran in and helped Juliet support the deputy's weight. The both of them fumbled for the belt, trying to dislodge it from the door. Juliet finally tugged the door open, freeing him.
"On the bed," she huffed.
They lifted him to the bed and laid him out flat. Gloria's husband rested his hands on his knees and took deep breaths.
"Gloria ran for Dr. O'Neill."
Juliet nodded and loosened the belt from around Marnes's neck. The flesh was purple beneath it. She felt for a pulse, remembering Roger looking just like this when she'd found him down in mechanical, completely still and unresponsive. It took her a moment to be sure that she was looking at the second dead body she had ever seen. And then she wondered, as she sat back, sweating, waiting for the doctor to arrive, whether this job she had taken would ensure it wasn't the last.
5. After filling out reports, discovering Marnes had no next of kin, speaking with the coroner at the dirt farm and answering questions from nosy neighbors, Juliet finally took a long and lonely walk up 8 flights of stairs, back to her empty office. She spent the rest of the day getting little work done, the door to the cafeteria open, the small room much too crowded with ghosts. She tried repeatedly to lose herself in the files from Holston's computers, but Marnes's absence was incredibly sadder than his moping presence had been. She couldn't believe he was gone. It almost felt like an affront to bring her here and then leave her so suddenly. And she knew this was a horrible and selfish thing to feel, and even worse to admit. As her mind roamed, she glanced occasionally out the door, watching the clouds slide across the distant wall screen. She debated with herself on whether they appeared light or dense, if tonight would be a good one for viewing stars. It was another guilt-ridden thought, but she felt powerfully alone, a woman who prided herself on needing no one. She played some more with the maze of files while the light of an unseen sun diminished in the cafeteria, while 2 shifts of lunch and 2 shifts of dinner vibrated and then subsided around her.